Here we are on Rock to Recovery Radio, episode who knows which number.
That's some serious drop tuning right there.
Yeah, totally. That was, it's my old band, Head P.E., it's kind of lame that I picked my old band, I guess, in some sense. But
that's not at all lame.
All right, then. See?
Totally amazing.
Okay, well, I can't say who you are yet because I got to set it up. I was almost going to say so-and-so says. So we're here at Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM. Laguna's only FM, human-crafted radio. Thank you for the show, station fellas and ladies. And thank you to New Vista Behavioral Health for sponsoring this, which is really cool. They're a great treatment program in the California area. There's a lot of them out there. Not all of them are great. I know these people personally. I know the owner. And it's cool that they've supported us. But if you're looking for help, definitely good people to talk to at New Vista Behavioral Health. So we got that out of the way. Now, Rock to Recovery Radio, what is this all about? I don't even know. I do know. What it's about is I'm a sober dude. I'm super passionate about recovery, and we like to carry the message. And so we talk to, you know, rock stars or celebrities or just rad humans that have kind of gone through it, struggle with addiction. It doesn't have to just be addiction, but struggle with life and had to overcome, had to find a way out. You know, we lose so many to these deadly diseases of mental health, addiction, eating disorders, suicidal ideation, PTSD, TBI. There's so many things that take us out. And so what we like to do is talk to people here. They take us through the story. They take us, through the dark days and what it was that got them out. And not just out. Not just to live a lame life, but a rad, amazing life in recovery. That's really what one thing that we want to highlight. So with me today, got to wrap out with him a little bit earlier, already having a good time with him. He's played in, let's see, Wasted Youth, Circle Jerks, TSOL, and yes, all true, and probably best known for bass in Bad Religion, Mr. Jay Bentley.
Hi.
Hi. What's up, dude?
I'm up.
You're
up. I'm up at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Is this past your bedtime?
No.
Not at all.
No, it's still good.
It's still good. Okay, cool. So thanks. I always thank people that come. You know, we're not in LA, which like musicians and stars and whatever, people are used to that pilgrimage. But thank you for coming down to Laguna.
I do. I love it here.
It's nice, right?
Yeah, it is nice.
Yeah.
I'm about half an hour up the road.
Yeah.
Just in Costa Mesa. So.
It doesn't suck.
No, it doesn't suck.
But it's thanks nice. For coming out on a Sunday night and hanging with us
thanks
here.
Thanks for asking me. I like you said, I think it's important. And there aren't very many opportunities to do something this broad where you get to talk to a lot of people about something pretty specific that you usually you're one-on-one with.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
And I was intrigued by the idea. I'm like, sure, I want to do that.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm glad you were. Yeah, and, you know, we know that there's like... there's help groups, there's AA, there's NA, there's all these groups out there that people can go to. But what about the people who maybe have never walked in there and wouldn't hear some of the messages there or wouldn't hear something from a therapist or whatever? We can take a message of recovery.
Right. I think that if you have to and you find parts of things, In my second recovery, because I basically went through this twice. I did 9 years of sort of white knuckling it and just saying I can do this by myself and everything's fine. And then I decided to do a little more experimentation and realized that was probably a bad idea. And then
that's an understatement.
Right. And then went back and discovered that if I looked for the similarities and really found things that people were offering that I wanted in my sobriety. That was super helpful to me.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that because, excuse me, when I first wrote the little like notes I was going to read off for the show, which I never used, it was for the listeners out there, look for the similarities and not the differences. We love to say, well, I never had a DUI or I'm not playing in a band.
Right, that's not me. I can't relate to that.
Right.
And I can assure you that I can sit in any folding chair in the basement of any church across the planet and find similarities with people that do just anything. Doctors, construction workers, secretaries, submarine guys. It doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
There will come a point in your story that I will say, and that's me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, sometimes I don't think when we're really sick, we won't hear that.
I agree. And I try to tell people when they say, you know, what do you do? I say the first thing you have to do is be genuinely honest.
Yeah.
And that's really, really, it's harder than you, it's easy to say,
so hard.
But hard to do.
Yeah.
And then my next, my next revelation was finding gratitude.
Yeah.
Which is another really difficult place to be when you're uncomfortable, unhappy, you're so unsure about everything. But you find a way to be grateful for that folding chair in the basement of a church and go like,
yeah.
I'm happy I'm here.
And for some of us, it's like, well, you know what? I didn't have to roll over and shoot dope right out of bed.
Well,
I'd have to roll over and grab a whiskey bottle.
Sure. And I think that's you know, no matter how small it is, when you attach that idea of being powerless to anything, really.
Yeah.
And say, this is my problem. My powerlessness is my problem. And whether it's shoes or drugs or booze, if you can admit it and sort of look at it and then work from there, it's a bit of a wider path. It's not quite the tightrope walk of like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I've said fine for a decade. I'm fine.
God, yeah.
I'm totally fine.
Yeah. Well, there's a time when I was so tweaked out going downtown Huntington and I was putting makeup under the dark circles of my eyes. Because some girl left it there, and I saw in the mirror, I was like, I look horrible, but I got to get a drink. And I'm just a sick weirdo. So I put it on, and then I look like, you know, Dracula.
Sure.
And I went downtown, and everybody's like, how are you? And I knew what they were asking. I knew, but I was like, what? I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine.
What? I'm fine.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's Maybelline.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So Jay Bentley, I'm already having a good time. Let's get to it. And I always leave this up to the interviewee, the guest. That's probably the easier way to say it, the guest.
The guest.
To decide where you want to start your story. Because for some of us, for me, I remember first grade just like, oh, so uncomfortable. Where would you start your story,
That's a hard one because I thought about that on the drive down. And You want to put it into perspective, and I realized that I don't have that like, oh, you know, I was raised in a fashion that made me uncomfortable. I wasn't. My mom and dad were great. They got divorced when I was 8, but that was weird, and it was okay. And I started to think about when I realized I may be different was being 13, 14, and going to parties with friends and sneaking into their parents' liquor cabinet. And like everybody would have like 2 or 3 drinks and I'd have like 20.
Uh-huh.
So it was more along the lines of realizing that I didn't have an off switch.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that I was trying to hide anything. I certainly felt better. I was like, wow, I'm top of the world, Ma.
Yeah.
But, I just would go and go and go. And then as I got older, what I realized was I would, I'd start drinking it at my parents' Midori bottle and then just move to like whatever else was there and just empty everything out.
Yeah. So you felt pretty good in your childhood. Like you didn't notice any weird,
struggles
emotionally.
No, I don't think so. I'd like to, you hear that story and you want to go like, I was a problem child. And it's like, I don't think I was.
Right.
Talk to my parents whether I was a problem child or not.
You can ask them. Should we call them right now?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Get my
dad on the phone.
Get Jay's dad on the phone right now.
And I think that like sort of going through high school and all that stuff was just fairly normal. And then I made that turn in 10th grade where we were talking about this earlier about the t-shirts and the mm-hmm. connection. I cut my hair, I put on a shirt that said Black Flag, and I just went to school and said, I don't care.
Yeah.
And this was 1979, so that wasn't going to go very well. And
what do you mean you cut your hair? How was your hair?
My hair was longer than this
when I was
a surfer.
It was 70s.
Right.
Long hair.
And then all of a sudden it wasn't, and it was black, and it blue black. And, it was just like, whoa, what happened? I just don't care.
For those of you that weren't alive in the 70s, you just didn't cut your hair then.
No.
It wasn't even that you had long hair. That was the style. You don't cut it. It's poofy. It was out.
You don't cut it. And if you cut it, you're making a commitment. And I think that part of that rebellion came a lot of rebellious behavior. So sure. I had a bottle of vodka in my locker at school because
Well, how'd that get there?
Well, I put it there because I wanted to push that image forward of like, I don't even care. Mm. And maybe I really didn't.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you got there though? Like you're doing pretty good. You said you didn't have problems with childhood or whatever.
No.
What made you want to go to the dark side?
I vividly remember I just kicked that cable. I was sitting with my mom and stepdad and my sister watching this 1978 The Year in Review on whatever broadcast channel was on the air.
They were using antennas.
Well, yeah, for sure. And they dedicated the last 10 minutes of this Year in Review to the Sex Pistols.
Oh, yeah.
And I just was going, that's for me.
Okay,
I'm
cool.
Done. I'm out of the Kiss Army. And I'm going straight to
that.
I'm going to Supercuts tomorrow, and this is happening.
Did Supercuts exist then?
Yes.
They did? Oh, that's cool. Oh, nice. And you showed them a picture and said?
Yeah, I just do this. And they're what's that? And I go, just cut it.
Yeah,
are you sure? Yeah, just cut it.
Sid had the blue black, huh?
Just cut it. And then it was straight to the, I don't even know what store. The CVS didn't exist. It was
Thrifty, maybe.
Maybe for just blue black hair dye.
Get hair dye and an ice cream.
The 5 cent ice cream in the cylinder.
Winning, yeah.
No, that's the one.
That's the one.
So that's sort of how that came about. Yeah, I don't know why, but I just really related to this seeming anarchy that they showed for 10 minutes of what these four guys were doing in an airport, and I went, yeah,
it spoke to you.
Yeah,
I want that
I want that to happen to me.
Yeah. Do you think there's parents at home right now going, see, I told you music screws up people's lives?
Probably yeah. I they're probably right.
But yeah,
yeah.
If you're already volatile, right? I think it has to do with your foundation.
I think so. I think so. And I think that maybe now, especially now, there's a part of music where the art form is less important than the success, the business. And you're like, I'm going to be in a successful band, which was never a possibility when you were in 1979 and 14. You don't think like, I'm going to be in a huge band. You think like, God, I'm terrible at guitar.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you saw the little snippet of the Sex Pistols. That's for you. You got vodka in your locker. And right when you started drinking, you already seen you had a gear and a, let's call it stamina. Stamina's not even the right word.
It's not.
No,
it's,
you had a demon. I mean, yeah, that's a little dramatic,
true.
But it's
no,
true,
but
right?
my close friends would tell me that. They said they know when I would start drinking and get to a point where I would stop looking at your eyes and I'd start looking at your shoulder. And they'd go, you're there.
Yeah.
And I would just be like, and, you know, get that face and just, oh,
yeah.
Uh-huh. But yeah, okay. And it was, I could not ever have enough. Ever.
Yeah.
There just wasn't enough.
Right.
Come to the party. We're going to have booze. How much? That's still not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so that's cool. Well, let's see. Should we throw in a song right now?
Sure.
Okay. Did you get the songs up? We got our boy Ernesto over here slaving away.
He found them.
On Spotify.
He actually found them.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you want to set up the first song?
There was a question. There was a reason why I picked these songs. This was me in the throes of my booze.
Yeah.
This was it.
This is it?
This is it.
So what year? How old were you?
This would be, honestly, into my 20s.
In your 20s?
Yeah.
So we're pushing it forward a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah, you know, the teenager thing, I think the thing about being a teenager is you do sort of drink when you can.
Yeah.
Because you're still not, you can't just walk into a liquor store and buy whatever you want. But you hit 21,
yeah.
And that world changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a fake ID since the time I was 17 years old, so mm-hmm. I did pretty good. Uh-huh. But 21 sort of just like, oh, all bets are off now.
Uh-huh.
So I think I made about 21 to 24 was about as good a run as I had until I hit 40.
All right. So this is you in your 20s. And what's the song?
What song is it?
Leonard Skinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, Leonard?
Okay. Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah.
All right, here we are. KX93.5. Jay Bentley, Bad Religion. God, you got to love some Skinner, right?
It's the Southern Rock Factor.
It's the Southern Rock Factor. So we're back on KX93.5 FM. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm Wes Geer, your host. And we are talking, I love this guy, to Jay Bentley, Bad Religion. He played TSOL with Jack.
And, I did.
And Wasted Youth. And what am I forgetting now?
Circle Jerks.
Circle Jerks. Yeah, that was my brother's
But program. That was only one show.
Oh, really?
They kicked me out right away.
They did that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
We played at the Music Machine, and I was so hammered. And at some point they had the drop ceiling, and I threw my bass up into the ceiling, and it went up into the drop ceiling and just stayed there.
And just stayed there.
And I'm looking up at the ceiling, and I'm like, well, that's not coming back.
Yeah.
And then that didn't go.
And that was your only bass.
That was, yeah.
Wasn't like now,
no,
where you probably have eight basses over.
No,
yeah.
Couldn't, you know, I was like, well, that's up there.
Yeah. Now, can I put a finer point on this? You're like, you know, you're a punk rock bass player at the time. That's what you're known for. Circle Jerks. They go, yeah, Jay, we'll get him to play bass. Yeah. You get kicked out of a punk rock band.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that happen?
It's like Shane McGowan getting kicked out of the Pogues for being too drunk. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, it happens.
It happens.
Isn't that crazy?
It's weird.
It is weird,
yeah,
right?
It's a weird thing.
I mean, you might have a problem if you get kicked out of the Circle Jerks after one show.
Yeah.
They didn't give you a second chance. Like,
no,
Jay,
that was,
chill out.
I got one. That was all I got.
One and done.
Yeah, one and done.
That's even better than if you were in there for months. And
I think so. And it was.
I think so.
It was good for me. It was good for me because it was a stepping stone back into playing music. Before that, I'd sold all my gear, and I had a job in a machine shop, and wasn't really doing much.
Well, you have so many good stories. We're talking off air. I don't know what it is. I'm trying to sound like I know the lingo. I don't.
We were off the record.
Yeah, and you're telling me in your 20s, you got this job. They were putting Harleys in every movie,
yep.
And you're working with a dude who had to build these Harleys, get them ready for movies.
Yeah.
And his thing was meth and Michelob.
No, it was the guy, not the owner guy. The owner guy was cool, but the Michelob was his. But the meth on the key was definitely the other guy. And the Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Okay.
The Southern Boogie was him.
And that's how we tied in the song we just played.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because that's how that all, like, it just, that sort of was who I became in my early 20s. I was a fighter and a drunkard, wow. and I smelled like meth and just it was that.
So you were doing the tweakers?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Because
that was a long time ago. You were a tweaker pioneer.
Okay. I mean, I did a social media post the other day about Black Beauties and codeine, and people were like, "What's a Black Beauty?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "You don't know."
They thought it was a Disney movie.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, it's fun. Okay. Some people at home probably maybe aren't even alcoholics or drug addicts like us, and they're probably like, these guys are sick. They're laughing at this stuff. It's something that happens. When you get on the other side of it, you can laugh back at how
it takes. And it takes a while. When I came into my, and I'll call it my real recovery, because what I did before that wasn't smart and wasn't sane. But you know, they were saying it takes 90 days to break a bad habit. And I remembered I would tell people, I came into these rooms and I was living in Vancouver, Canada at the time. And I walked into this room and I cried. And I mean, I'm a grown man. I'm 40 years old and I'm crying. And they're saying, well, read this passage from the book. And I'm crying. And they're like, ah, big crybaby guy and whatever. And it took years later for me to, and I would relate that story about crying. And I stopped and thought about why I was crying.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't because I was sad, and it wasn't because I was embarrassed. It was because it was over.
Yeah.
And it was relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really didn't think that a person like me could get that, could have that moment of clarity, could have that moment where I don't ever have to do this again if I choose to take what they're offering me.
Would you call it surrender?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I had a similar thing. Because I had one more run, the family closed in on me, and I was just up in a bedroom at my brother's house, kind of milling stuff over my head, and I just started crying, and it was kind of like, it was almost like a spiritual connection, moment of clarity, surrender, like, it hit me what was really going on.
Yeah.
And I had to wave the flag.
The truth is, it's the bottom that they talk about.
Yeah.
You know, when you hit that bottom, and you have two choices, you can either just continue on,
right,
or you just stop, and
take action, because there's always another bottom. That's the messed up thing.
I have
a friend that died, like, his somebody OD'd in his arms. He OD'd, but he lived. Oh, I'll never do it, that's my bottom. And now he's dead,
right?
So bottom kind of gives us that grace, that moment of clarity we can act upon,
right? If it, you know, and that's sort of, if you get fortunate and you cling on to whatever branch gets handed to you, and you do the work. And it's, I just, people say like, oh, the work. And it's like, you know, that work part was just being honest. Mm. And that's difficult, but it's not, you know, it's not any more difficult than anything else that you do when you wake up in the morning and think, how many phone calls am I going to have to make?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do last night?
Yeah.
And, you know, I you could do that for 6 months before you've just alienated every single person you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you're 86 from every bar within 5 miles of your home.
It comes with the territory, doesn't it?
It kind of does.
Yeah. So let me backtrack here. So in the 80s, you're in Bad Religion.
Yeah.
And you're working with the guy doing the Harleys.
Not coinciding? Not quite yet.
Okay, that came
not
after.
Quite
I'm
yet.
Thinking, see, this is quite a life.
See, Bad Religion started in we just say 1980 because it's a nice round number. We're not sure if it's winter of 79.
Nobody remembers.
Don't care. But by 84, it had kind of just withered away for whatever purposes things happened. And we all went out to go find our way.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing these motorcycles because I just needed money, and this guy lived down the street from me. So it was just something to do. Bad Religion was kind of coming back. This would have been about 86 coming into 87.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just before the band really reformed in the fall of 87. Mm-hmm. And then we started writing and made Suffer the next year. And then and then we just never looked back from there.
Cool. I was just listening to Suffer on the way over.
Yeah. So that just turned 30 this year. It was kind of like, wow, it's a 30-year-old record.
Wow. That's cool. So when did it, like, okay, so now, because we talk about addiction and it has to have a chance, like, to grow, you know, and you have to have that opportunity to cultivate your addiction. It's a progressive disease. There's probably a lot of people that are potential alcoholics or drug addicts that their life kind of keeps them shelter.
Sure.
Right. So
sure.
But you, right. So if you had gotten a job somewhere wearing a suit and tie, but you instead you're in Harley World with meth and Michelob Man.
Right.
Probably helped things.
That helped that pushed things along, and then obviously you get into a band and you start going out on tour and it's just everything's free.
Right.
And there is no one there to really stop you, because who's gonna stop you in the middle of DeKalb, Illinois? No one.
I can relate. I know. And you really need booze when you're in those towns.
Yeah, no one's going to stop you.
Yeah, no one.
At all. And you're going to drive a golf cart into the swimming pool because you just don't care. And this is not funny, and it's not cool to do this because
it's other people's property.
Yeah, we laugh about this now, but it's not funny.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I get it. So when did it start? Okay, you knew you had another gear and you didn't stop. When did it start getting bad? Because there's a way that it was explained to me I liked. It's fun, then it's fun with problems, then it's just kind of more problems. When was the problems the thing that...
Okay, well, I have to go to the two times.
Yeah.
So the first time where I guess I scared myself, because one of the things that I had pride in was I've never put a needle in myself.
Mm.
And I dug that, and I was like, oh, I never did that. Once again, the differences.
Right.
And we were in New York, and I was in someone's penthouse apartment smoking heroin. We're chasing the dragon. I thought, this is a great idea. And off to Europe we go on a tour, and more of that. And we're in Amsterdam, and I'm with a friend. And he's going to go score, and he ends up buying soap.
Mm.
And for some reason, we think it's a good idea to go back to the guy that he bought it from and say, hey, man, this wasn't cool. And we realize pretty quickly we're going to get killed.
Oh, my God.
And so we're running away from these
people.
Did they
have guns?
No, but they were a lot of them. Enough of them to sort of just tear us apart
with
their hands.
Right, yeah, sure.
And you know, that happened, and
and where were you?
We were in Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
And I thought that was kind of dumb. And then we get home, and
sometimes you just got to take your losses on a drug deal.
And so I got home, and I started thinking, like, God, that's not what I thought would happen to me, but it happened to me. And I started getting a little introspective about problems I was getting into, right? The drinking, the problems. Now it's just problems. But I kept drinking, and I was still working on the motorcycles. And in all honesty, I did something. I went to a bar, and I stayed there well past closing time, and I left my dog in the car.
Ooh.
So from about 6 p.m. to maybe 3 a.m., I'd left my dog in the car. And when I came out, my dog was just staring at me like I was the biggest jerk in the world. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And it was really kind of that feeling of like I did something to this dog because I was selfish and wanted a drink. And I know it seems small, but it really hurt me inside.
Yeah.
And so the next day, I remember this. I drove out to a friend's house and I said, I've got a problem. And so he took me to my first meetings. And that was my introduction into kind of coming up and admitting I have a problem. But it was, I did everything wrong. Everything in that program of recovery, I did everything wrong. No sponsor, didn't talk to anybody, was super resentful.
Pissed.
Just, you know, everyone that talked, I would just find the differences and go, you're just a fool. You know?
Yeah, these people are idiots.
Yeah, you're dummies. And so I just kind of, it didn't work because it was never going to work. And
you weren't ready.
No, I wasn't.
Kind of.
I just wasn't hurt enough.
Hurt enough, yeah.
And I, you know, you say to someone, if you find that bottom where you hurt enough, you'll stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of people could get out before it gets too bad.
Yeah.
But very few of us do. If it doesn't get really bad, we think we still have it under control.
I think that someone once explained to me that for every day that I'm sober, my addiction is doing push-ups in the other room.
Yep.
Waiting for me to make that like, oh, you know, maybe I could have a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's over because this thing is now, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger in the other room going, oh, yeah. I'll be back.
It's like John Rambo.
Yeah.
He's coming back with a vengeance.
So, you know, I think I have a healthy fear of that addiction in the other room.
So help me with the timeline. You're in Bad Religion. You did the motorcycle thing. Mm-hmm. And then where are you at, like, career-wise? Where's Bad Religion? Did you leave because of that? Because I know you were out of Bad Religion for a couple of years.
No, this was the leaving Bad Religion was earlier than that. And then kind of...
That's when the band went on hiatus?
Right. Okay. And then from, just we'll just say, 88 forward, 88 to now... Mm-hmm. That 88 to 91 was sort of my great run at being young and crazy. 88
gotcha.
To 91.
Yeah.
And in September of 91, that was when I went in. Got some help.
But didn't do it too good.
And didn't do it too good. And by 98, I was back out.
And so how did you feel when you're, quote, getting help, as you said, but not doing it well? Did just... hate life.
Yeah, I was just
it's
dry.
Miserable, isn't it?
It's dry. I was miserable and I think that booze was the answer to all of my mental anguish.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't doing the work of sitting down and saying like, well, you know, what is it? What is my problem here? What is my participatory issue?
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm doing something wrong. And I just didn't do any of that. So yeah. I just didn't drink, and I'd walk around with a six-pack of Dr. Pepper and be mad all the time.
Yeah.
And that was my life.
Yeah, yeah. I like what my friend Brandon Jordan, I heard him say. He said, you know, I have alcoholism, and I used to treat it with drugs and alcohol, and now I treat it with the program.
Right.
So if you come into the program and you don't treat it with something, then you got your disease running rampant.
Yeah, you're just a giant hole.
Yeah,
and it's pretty gross. Yeah,
you might be a hole.
Yeah, all of those things, and that wasn't swearing, by the way. You don't have to edit that.
Mm-mm. No, we are in the FCC regulations. Okay, so let's take another little breaky poo here.
Okay.
And what's your next song here? You want to tie in?
This was the concept of the beginning of my sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I stopped and thought about how I felt. And this is the second one. This is the one that happened in 2005. This is where I'm at now in my life. And this sobriety was, it was what they say. It was the pink cloud. It was finding like-minded individuals and realizing that I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
And it was ethereal. And
I don't even know what that word means.
It ghost-like.
Okay.
You know, you can't. It's smoke. You just can't grab it. You don't ever get to hold it, but it's there.
I like
And I remember really relishing those feelings. The feelings of being back in control of a life that was out of control, even though that's the absolute wrong thing to say because none of us are ever in control right. of anything. But but I think that that feeling of I'm going to be okay.
Hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some connection.
Yeah.
That's great. So what song is it?
I think it's Lips Like Sugar, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, I love this song.
Me too.
Right on. Rock.
Sugar.
All right, here we are back live on KX93.5 FM, Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Geer. I'm sitting here having the best time with my man, Jay Bentley of Bad Religion. Okay, so we're kind of in your story where we're talking about how you got out and all that, but there's something you told me off air that you're talking about how you're on stage and it was so bad they had to do what?
They had to tie a rope around me because I was going to fall off. It was like a 20-foot high stage, and down in we were in Brazil somewhere. Yeah, it was bad.
I mean, that's pretty much like wearing a helmet.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
No, it was bad. It's one of the very few occasions on stage that I have no memory of, and the only memory that I have of that entire show is Fletcher from Pennywise pushing a beer bottle halfway down my throat. And not letting me move and just drinking the whole beer, going like, well, okay, I'm doing this. So
that's insane.
Yeah.
So you're a danger to yourself at that point and the band.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, right?
Yeah.
You're wearing rope. Here's the thing I want to know. If anybody listening at home hears this broadcast, maybe wants to share it, somewhere out there there's a picture of Jay Bentley with a rope around him.
I've looked really hard for that.
Please, let's find it.
I know those shows always have cameras, and they always have cameras on cranes. I'm like, where's the video of this?
Yeah. What year was it?
2004.
Oh, yeah, plenty of
right?
Yeah.
Come on.
I know.
Pull out your handy cam. Let's see those Discman videos that you... 2004.
Well, you got to get Bentley, Jay Bentley with the rope around him so he doesn't fall off the 20-foot stage.
Yeah, it's never going to happen again.
So what was... never again. Right.
Never
God willing.
Again.
Yeah. What was the thing? Because we talked about the dog episode and it broke you down. You got willing, but you never really got into doing the work. What was the bottom that got you back in?
I was living in an apartment, an unfurnished apartment in Vancouver, just laying on the floor. I was drinking 2 liters of vodka a day and just locked my keys in the drawer. I tell people, I go, there's nothing sadder than quitting. And I was trying to stop. I was trying to stop. And then I said, like, you know what? I'm not going to stop. I'm going to go the other way.
Right.
I'm just going to do this.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I really gave it my best shot. And I tell people, I go, you know, you never really know what you can put your body through until you really give it a shot. And I lasted 18 days.
Wow.
Which isn't a whole lot when you put it in the perspective of the years that you've been drinking. But when you really... have at it.
Yeah.
18 days was about what I got.
You're trying to kill yourself.
Pretty much.
With drinking. Where's the band? Where's the girlfriend at the time? Wife?
Girlfriend is in Glendale, California.
And you're like on... what are you doing in Vancouver by yourself?
I live there. My first marriage was there. Mm. My kids were there. My ex was there. So, you know, I had an apartment near the kids' school so that I could be close.
What was the ex and the, you know, kids? What was the story you're selling them?
I didn't really talk to my ex, and the kids just kind of thought I was weird.
Okay.
They were boys, and they were young teenage boys. They were, 13, 15. So they just kind of thought, your dad's weird.
You're in a punk band.
You're in a punk band. Yeah. Your house has no furniture or food. The story goes that I was laying on the floor spinning as we do, mm-hmm. and I remembered back to my early bad programming, and I said I wanted to say the prayer, and I couldn't. I was like, God,
grant the serenity prayer.
Yeah, that one. Mm-hmm. God, something. And I can't, and it's not coming to me.
Yeah.
And the one thing that's in my apartment is 3 boxes of books that I haven't opened. And in the middle of all of this, spinning and thinking and kind of being bummed, I get up because I said, I've got my old big book. Mm-hmm. It's in that box somewhere. And I go to the corner where the boxes are, and the big book is sitting on top of the boxes.
Whoa.
And I remember thinking, that's really weird. I haven't opened these boxes. And the boxes still aren't opened.
Plus, of all the stuff you had in your house, it could have been a couch and a boombox.
It was
literature.
It was literature, and so there was just a moment there where I just said, I have to stop this, but I don't know how. And then I was back on trying to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever tried to stop and physically cannot, you know how cyclical and depressing that is.
Ah.
You're just constantly defeated and demoralized.
Yeah.
And so I was doing that and trying really hard, and a series of events started to unfold that I still to this day can't explain. One day there's only 8 units in the building that I was living in, and my mail slot had a card in it, and I pulled it out and it said psychic. And I said, okay. And I went upstairs and I called. I said, I'm supposed to call you.
Mm.
Why? I said, you left your card in my mailbox. I said, I've never been to your house.
Wow.
So I went and I met with this person, and they were, they said, oh, so what's your problem? And I go, and I just kind of said, I don't know, and gave them stuff. And they said, here, write a chart of your day, a pie chart of your day. And I wrote a little thing, and there was a little sliver between like 4 and 5 where I would wallow in self-pity, and then between
you put that in there
between 5 and 2 just drink myself into oblivion. And they're like, so what's the problem here? And I said, that little sliver right there. And she goes, right.
Oh,
yeah, that little sliver is the problem. And I go, right. So I wallow in self-pity, and then I drink myself out of it. And she goes, well, you're not helping yourself any.
Oh,
so she hands me a number.
That's insane.
She gives me a card with a number on it. And I go home, and she goes, I want you to call this number. And I call the number, and it's central office.
Of course,
central office. And I start laughing, and I said, I need a meeting. And they're like, when? And I said, right now. And they said, there's a big book study starting in 1 hour right down the street from your house.
In Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Hallelujah. She was your Eskimo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so did you come in this time with a new willingness?
Oh, man, I came in with my tail between my legs and the tears and the whole 9 yards of like, this is it. This is it for me.
Yeah.
And I listened to what people had to say, and I heard the things like, I know that I've got plenty more drunks in me. I know I do, but I don't know how many more sobers I have in me.
Yeah.
And that's important to hear that, because it's like, look, I can play this game all day long, but I didn't like it. And I wasn't comfortable, and I was not in control of my life.
I love that you bring that up. My somebody very close to me, my family, is sober, and they always say that they heard that quote, yeah, I don't know if I have another recovery in me. And, I work a lot on treatment, and anyhow, you hear these kids always like, I'm just going to go out, I'm going to sneak out, I'm going to shoot dope, I'll be back on Monday for programming. It's like, you already screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Because once you pick up, you don't know what's going to happen.
Every single time you pick up, it's you're playing Russian roulette.
Yeah.
You really are.
It's hard to believe. It really is. But you hear about it all the time. People die.
I have to say that I'm proof of that scientific experiment, because I did it myself. I wanted to go see it. I hear about people saying like, oh, I went on Friday and came back to a meeting on Monday. And I said, you're lucky. And they look at me and I go, it took me 6 years.
Yeah, right.
My Friday night lasted 6 years.
Yeah. There's a tweaker guy I know in the rooms, and he says, I did meth once in 1979. It lasted 20 years or something like that. Yeah.
It's true, because you're just like, you never know. And you might think like, oh, I'll just give this a try. And that try can take over your life.
Fatal. It's fatal. Yeah. And that's important for people to hear at home.
I had to always tell my kids, because my boys thought this a lot, and they would just say, oh, if I die, I die. And I would just look them in the eye and I say, there are worse things than dying.
Mm.
I just want you to know that. And, you can be totally conscious and in a coma for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be a nice place to be.
Slow alcoholic death, the loneliness, the misery. I can't imagine anything worse.
Yeah.
So what's key to you today? How long do you have?
13 years.
13.
Yeah.
That's great. That's amazing. What's key that in your recovery, for people at home, or something you might want to share?
Talking with other alcoholics.
Yeah, staying connected.
Yeah, staying connected with other alcoholics, because I think that isolate, when you isolate yourself away from that world, when you think like, once again, finding the differences, even within sobriety, my sober friends, oh, I'm not married. I don't have kids. I'm not like them. I don't have a dog. I don't drive a truck. Whatever. You're looking for differences.
Yeah.
And I find that I am 100% compatible with anybody who is in some kind of program of recovery. Because that's I've learned that what we have in common is a way stronger bond than any politics, religion, anything. This is serious. This is everything that we have.
I agree with that so much. That's great. Let's throw in that last tune now. You got it? Ernesto's got it. I love it. I feel the same way too. You know, Rock to Recovery's, we get non-musicians to play music as a healing form of art. And we started working with wounded vets. And so first when I was going out there, I'm like, gosh, well, I know what my pitch is to alcoholics and drug addicts. What will it be to vets? And I kind of came to realize through the work and whatever process is that when you're in that dark spot, it doesn't matter what gets you there. If it's gambling, if it's sex addiction, if it's PTSD.
Yeah.
Not to say that some aren't worse than others, but it's really the feeling of hopelessness and sadness and misery and disconnection.
Yeah.
The elements are all the same, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, therefore, the way out is very much the same.
Yeah.
Has a lot of the same elements, right? So what's this next song?
This next song is from an artist named Matt Good. He's a Vancouver boy. And this song sort of just speaks to me about where I am now. You'll have to hear the lyrics of the song. He talks about like landing on your feet after everything that goes so bad.
Love it.
But you know, you're everything around you is still going backwards. And he kind of puts it in for me, he's putting it into a frame of like, you have to remember that this is your life and don't have expectations of becoming sober and everything getting perfect. 'Cause it's not. What we learn how to do is to deal with an imperfect world.
There you go.
Yeah, and I couldn't deal with that before, but now you get the tools, which is it's an amazing thing to have a good toolbox. I tell people, man, you get a good toolbox, and I mean that back to the motorcycle thing. There's nothing better than a good
great
toolbox.
Great analogy. You can handle anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Killer. Here we go. Rock to Recovery Radio.
Good morning. Don't cop out. You crawl from the cancer to land on your feet. Are you crazy to want this even for a while? Making this shit up. The reasons for being are easy to pay. You can't remember the others, they just kind of went away. So you're driving, it's rush hour. The car's on the freeway, you're moving like slugs. When you drift out to wake up, do you always hit the brake? With cop out.
Yeah. We just cut in the vocals. I'm so sorry.
Matt's my friend. He understands.
Sorry, Matt. Yeah. So here we are back. Rock Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Geer. We're with Jay Bentley of many amazing legendary punk bands. Circle Jerks for One Day that he got kicked out of. Might be
One Day.
My favorite part of his story. well, the rope story is great too. So, Jay Bentley of Bad Religion. We have a caller here. We're going to take a call. We rarely do this. There's many buttons and knobs. Let's see if we can.
I'm telling you right now, I'm really excited about this.
It's not even to talk to the guy. It's just to see if we can do it. So, Ernesto, here you go. It's your big moment. Oh, is our caller on?
I am here.
Yeah!
Yeah, we did it!
Hey! Congratulations, and I promise not to ramble.
Hey, even better. We love it. What's your name?
Hey, Wes, this is Shane, Ian's dad. Hey, Jay. It's Ian from Jamming with Ian. Hey, I wanted to thank you both for everything you've done for us. And, Wes, I certainly wanted to thank you for our conversation last week. But getting to the point, what is the one thing or a couple of things that you wish while you were starting your recovery family would have done or wouldn't have done that would have been most supportive for you both?
I'm going to give this to my man, Jay Bentley.
Wow, that's a tough one.
Yeah. What did your family do when you were running amok? Were they helping or did they bail? Did they draw a boundary?
No, they didn't do anything. My mom said I didn't have a problem, which was okay. And at the time, you know, everybody around me was kind of in the same boat. I think the only person that may have said something to me about slowing down was Brian in Bad Religion.
Mm-hmm.
And previous to that, Brian had said, like, man, when I was still sober, Brian said, like, man, it would have been fun to drink with you.
Mm.
And after about 6 years of me drinking, he said, man, maybe you should slow down. And I said, I will tear your head off. And he said, oh. And I said, this is the person that you thought you wanted to have fun with.
Yeah.
But I listen, in all honesty, they're, it's hard to help someone when they're in it. And all you can really do is sort of plant a seed. But most of the time, you're going to get a lot of pushback from people when you say, like, hey, man, maybe you need some recovery. And you're going to get, no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of tough love that has to happen. There's a lot of just shutting down that has to happen. I don't think that any, you know, I for me personally, I was pretty much just left alone.
Yeah.
And ended up alone. So.
Which could be good.
It was good for me because I am where I'm at now.
Yeah.
It could have been not great. You know, it would have been one of those things where it's like, oh, they found me 3 weeks later in my apartment because I was alone and no one knew.
Yeah.
So.
It's tough. There's, you know, I think the answer is that there's no one answer.
No.
For sure.
No.
For me, it was consequence. I kind of told my brother what I was doing, and I'm going to try to get the ship straightened out. And we had kind of a deal, and I didn't stay clean, and I got loaded again. And he created a consequence, and he fired me. And it was like basically get help
or
we're washing our hands for you. And even then, I think I shared this before, but even then I was like, maybe I'll just go to Thailand.
Right.
Maybe I need to meet an elephant.
Right.
And then I had that moment we talked about earlier on the show where I lied in the bed pondering which way do I go, and I just started crying like, dude, you're out of control.
Yeah.
And that's when I surrendered and asked for help. But it was the consequence.
Right.
You know, if my brother was like, hey, man, okay, one more try, and I'm going to give you a raise, too, just to show you I love you, I might be dead.
Honestly, I guess back to the rope thing. I knew, and in 38 years of being in the band, I had never done anything like that where I really let them down that bad. Mm. And I knew the next day when the way they were talking to me and looking at me, I'm like, I don't know what I did, but I know it was bad.
Right.
And I think there was kind of going back to the dog thing where, like, you look at the dog and you're like, I did something wrong, and it's sort of hurting me inside. And knowing what I did to those guys, it started that ball rolling of, like, this is probably not going as well as I think it's going.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm the only one having fun here.
Yeah.
And that would have been in December of 2004, and so I didn't get sober until February 21st of 2005, so... There was that 2-month cycle of like, I'm gonna.
Takes time.
I'm gonna work on this.
So that's a good, that's some good input. Like, cause yeah, I knew I was hurting my brother and I was hurting the family and scaring them. And that's what you're saying. Your band, the same thing. Yeah. So, and that's what they do in interventions. Like, hey, you're not just getting loaded, hurting yourself. You're hurting us too.
Right.
And it's good to send that message.
Right. And maybe because no one came to me and said like, you're a bad person, which would have given me ammunition to go, I'll show you.
Yeah.
They just kind of gave me that like, oh, I was kind of over it.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Well, there it is, Shane. I hope it helps. And then there's Al-Anon out there too, you know?
Yeah, brother. Thank you guys both. Keep doing what you guys are doing. You guys are making a difference, and it's helping us personally. So keep it up.
Thanks, man. Thanks for calling.
Say hi to Ian.
Talk to you soon. Yeah. Will do. Bye, guys.
Okay, later. Well, that's all the time we got right here. This has been a great show. Is there any one, I think we kind of did this, but is there any one thing you want to share with somebody out there struggling, looking for answers? Any little nugget of info?
Just be honest with yourself.
Get honest.
Yeah, just get honest. Just have a moment where you can sit down and try not to be too judgmental and just get honest.
Yeah.
And it's tough. It's not easy. And if you really think you have a problem, the two choices you have are start some scientific experimentation and write it down. Write down all the nights that you go like, oh, I had to make 3 phone calls the next day because I was at the bar and did this, or one of the things that I was taught was what we do when we're sober is we suit up and show up, and I spent 30 years not doing that.
Never.
So, you know, when you start taking personal responsibility for your actions and the next, you know, you pay your bills on time and you take care of all your creditors and everything that's happening, you don't just keep burying it. So these are just things that happen in life. But I think as far as that addiction part, because in my experience, my addiction was far smarter than I will ever be.
Oh, that's so good.
And no matter how I tried to outthink it, I would talk myself back into being allowed to drink because I was going to make it okay. And those are the things that if you can sit down and get honest about the times that you've talked yourself into or out of something for drugs or alcohol, then you might start asking yourself, like, how deeply embedded are you in drugs and alcohol? And then you finally ask that first question, are you powerless?
Yeah.
Because I was. And that's a big thing when you can admit, like, I'm powerless.
Yeah. That's great. I love it. Yeah. You know, we live in a great time where you can get honest. Everybody knows about addiction. There's somebody out there that's done it worse than you, who's had a darker past than you, who's, you know, broken more laws than you, who's sicker than you or less sick. We're never too sick to recover.
No, never.
Yeah, so that's kind of the message here. If you're out there and you're struggling, remember there's a bunch of people that would love to help you. It's never too late. Never too late to just ask for help. So thanks for tuning in. I had the best time with Jay Bentley.
This was great.
Yeah, I want to have you on, you know, a couple more times a year.
I got a lot of stories.
So thank you for tuning in. I'm Wes Geer, your host, Rock to Recovery Radio on KX93.5 FM, brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. We're out.
We just want to feel good.